And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah. Unafeared, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, an undisclosed location in north central Washington next to the Canadian border on the Columbia River. So if it was a nuke, you might be able to find me. This is, we're up here visiting with friends, and we have a gentleman that's going to come on. He is a physical trainer that, as our friends go around between Panama and here and other places, he's a physical trainer and masseuse, and I've known him for years, and he's just a very intelligent, smart, knows what's up guy in Panama. His wife's a doctor, I think, or nurse. We'll find out. I think she's a doctor, but she works for a company in Cuba. So he travels often between Cuba and Panama. So we're going to find out the politics of Panama, Cuba, and we're going to, you know, his impression, of course, of the U.S. But the China is really coming in to Panama. And there's a lot of investment, a lot of shenanigans going on with, as the same with U.S. What do the people think of that? You know, which side are they on and why? And then they just had an election. Every 5 years they have their, you know, big elections. And I think it's like everything, you know, certainly the president. And the new guy came in, and there were so many stories of a lot of people that worked for the government or had mostly contractors, you know, they building roads and all that kind of stuff, and not get paid for years. They got to elect a new president to get paid, you know, that kind of thing. And if you're, hey, man, you didn't give enough kickback, you didn't love us enough, you're not on our side, so you don't get paid. We're just not going to pay you. What are you going to do now? You know, so then when the new guy came in, you know, everybody starts getting, you know, the arrears covered, getting paid and so on. So I'm just, is this normal? Let's talk about it. So he'll come on later today. He'll come in and we'll get on it. Because I'm interested in, you know, you got the Panama Canal. It's been extended, widened. It's got like another canal that has, you know, take bigger ships. And the way the canal system works, I think there's not that many locks. You know, there's only, I don't know, half a dozen of them going in and out, I think. But there's a big lake, you know, the top of the lock system. There's just a lake, and you have a bunch of ships in there taking turns coming in and out and stuff. So we'll get educated on how this really works and who's in charge, and if they feel that part of the treaty, I think, you know, when they turned it over to Panama, of course, got a U.S. military base there, but if they feel that, hey, you're not doing it right, a little too much Chinese influence, then it's ours now, and the U.S. military to run it. So to think it's really, it's kind of like the Suez Canal, you know, between the Mediterranean and the Red Sea through Egypt there. If it comes down to it, European nations, certainly the British would go, and we're in charge. But you think that Straits of Hormuz would be easy to plug up? All you got to do is jack up one hinge on one lock, and you're done. So you think we're going to have a war that's going to be successful? And it'll cascade into airships. Yeah, we'll just do an airship and be done with it. Give me an airship and I'll fly over and ion cannon and you're not allowed. I mean, ugh. You know, I'm Last night, our host encouraged us to watch this one movie called The Principal. And what it is, he's high math guy. You know, he's astro-molecular'd up on quantum everything. And I watch a lot of these documentaries, and I've gone through a lot of physics and quantum entanglement and the quantum physics and mechanics and blah, 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 blah. So I'm sitting there on YouTube and documentaries of I'm in bed and, you know, teach me something. And a lot of this stuff and different pieces I've seen, and what it really focused on was the background radiation as you look from the satellites, now that we've got satellites and detect this. You look at the background radiation of the creation or what the universe is made of. And it does a lot of things in this documentary. The thing, I mean, you know, Mikhail Kachu, the physicist from, where is he from? I think New York. And, you know, the Japanese guy, heritage. And I've talked to him before. We've had him on Charles's show I was producing, and I get to talk to him a little bit and meet him. You know, he signs a book for Charles and this and that and whatever. So we had regular conversations with him because Charles really liked his books as he brings it down to, you know, I can understand it kind of thing. And so, you know, he's a name. And there's a bunch of other guys you've seen, you know, before and so on, and they're discussing, yeah, you know, there's some weird stuff going on the more data we get. And the data that they're getting is that it seems that they're trying to prove that the universe is homogeneous. You know, it's a mixed soup. It's even across all matter and everything, you know, behaves the same and it's everywhere. But what's happening is they start to, as they're doing the measurements and they're doing the, Scott, you'll see it kind of has a band. You know, they call it the axis of evil. It's just, and I think, why do they call it the axis of evil? Because it's going to mess up all our calculations and screw with all our stuff, and we don't like it. But that's kind of the impression I got. So this pattern in the sky has a, like, if you did a sphere, you're inside a beach ball in the very middle, and you're looking out, you know, from the perspective of the Earth, and you see all the galaxies and so on in the universe. There's a pattern. And you're going, okay, well, they're going out from the Big Bang. It, you know, has a dispersion pattern of you kind of see. Well, it gets more than that. It kind of focuses all back to Earth. So, of course, Copernicus, as he's discovering, you know, it's not the everything doesn't revolve around the Earth. We go around the sun. And it's not even around the sun. It's around the center of mass because you have mass attracts each other, and you have the center of mass, so they orbit around each other. That's why the planets will make the – you know, our sun wobble a little bit kind of thing. So, and they're discovering a lot of other exoplanets around the galaxy and stuff, and some of them not so far away. But the point that they were making in this is they go, look, man, we're not making this up. You know, this is, it seems to focus back to Earth. And I'm going, all right, why? I don't know. It just does. So then it starts getting into a bunch of other quantum physics that you start thinking about is whenever is it a wave or a particle, light, and it, when you observe it or you measure it, boom, it positions itself and it's not a wave anymore. It's a particle, and you can see where there's, you know, hilarity about discussing that. But the main thing that I get out of this is I'm going, are we creating the universe? Is it by, and the, all this math that they go, we need dark matter and dark energy. Those calculations, it's just a variable they just throw in. Well, therefore, it must be this much, you know, matter out there, you know, 70-80% or whatever is dark matter. 90% of the matter is a dark matter, make our calculations work. But not if you have the Earth as the center of the universe. Then all of a sudden the calculations work. And I go, what? Okay. It's called The Principal. Yeah, it's a documentary. I'm sure it's all over the place. I'll be watching it again. But the main thing is that they're also talking about universes and multi-dimensions and multiverses that pop in and out of existence all the time. It's like a quantum foam that we're surrounded by. You know, blip, 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 and then, you know, sort of let there be light, and this one kind of kept going. But is it from our perspective? Is it from our own mind? Are we creating reality? Hell, are we in a simulation? Are we Matrix plugged in and we're just running the program? How do you know? The Principal.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Well, happy 4th of July, 4th of July, 4th of July. You know, when I first started hanging out with libertarians and so on and becoming libertarian and having a young family and so on, there was a couple of big holidays, you know. Of course, everybody did their own Christmas thing or whatever and Christmas parties and such. But the main holidays were 4th of July. It gave some, you know, reverence to it. But the biggest one, even more for a libertarian on 4th of July, for some reason, seemed to be Thanksgiving. And I was always interested in that. I go, oh, yeah, Thanksgiving's a big deal. It's just thanks. They were very grateful, you know, for America and what it stood for and the promise of and the sacrifices of people and so on and everything. For some reason, it's just like, man, we just give thanks. You know, thanks. All right, we're good. And then the 4th of July, that brings up a whole bunch of history. Well, let me tell you what really happened and who did what, when, and how, and kind of whatever. And it was on the 3rd of July that they actually, but then the 4th that they, you know, you go down the rabbit hole, but it was the discussion and the arguments, and there was so much printed material. You have so many things that are available to you in history. And as we're up here, whenever we – I love coming up here. The minds up here are just amazing. We got more people coming through. These – I am a little bitty baby brain, you know, over here sucking all this up, trying to just, you know, get things – I ask a lot of questions. You know, it's that interview question thing. Oh, God, Ernie, you're so shut up. And I'm just going, hey, man, I need some foundational basis of whoa, whoa, whoa. Pause everything. Explain this to me, because a lot of these different facts, if you glaze over stuff, it's hard to comprehend the other things that are built on that foundation. If you don't understand the foundation, if I can't explain it to you, you know, then that means I really don't understand it. And that's one thing they do in like the Little Red Schoolhouse was so important in early America when you're educating children. The older children would help educate the younger children. And that's when you knew that you had a mastery of something, is when you could teach it. If you can explain to somebody else something and have them understand it, then you probably understand it pretty well yourself, or you're a really good parrot, you know. But this just regurgitation of facts is not understanding. It's not the same thing. And I look for understanding. And I got, you know, a whole bunch less brain cells than a lot of these guys. So it's talking about, you know, just everything. I mean, high finance. I mean, we're talking high. Okay, I could do that again. But the, you know, the finance is just, you know, all the different and how you make money on this and this. And they did this and stupid. I can't believe it. I'll tell you one thing that is kind of a duh to me. Is that the futures price of grains and corn and a lot of agricultural products, you know, like cattle and swine and so on, chickens and all that, got destroyed in the most recent floods that's been going on in the Midwest. And there's been tornadoes and floods and snowstorms and freaking, you know, all the way up to, like, you know, last week or something. I mean, it's been amazing how late the winter has been. This has an impact. Along with the flooding and so on. You know, you're not planting when you're in ankle-deep water. So future crops are non-existent. There's going to be a shortage based on past performance. So why are the futures so low on a lot of these grains? And so some of the guys, yeah, we're buying some futures on this, man. We're going to, you know, it's going to go up in price, and we're going to position ourselves and we take advantage. And I don't know why people don't see it. We'll take the free money. Free money. You know, let's do it. So I go, yeah, there's, you can do the math on how many, you know, what the yields are per acre and how many are not. I mean, it's not like you can't do it. You know, okay, it's going to be short. Well, everybody's going to go on a diet. Is that not necessarily a bad thing? You know, prices will determine a lot of what you do or where you go eat or so on. But it's not the same everywhere. Donna and I were in North Carolina, and it was stark the difference in pricing. Go to a restaurant, and now I remember, you know, uphill both ways. But, you know, not too long ago, you know, my kids were small. We could get a family, go to fast food or something. We probably all of us get what we want, walk out under $20. And hell no, it's bills, you know, it's $40 now or something, you know, for not as much. And I'm just not willing to, I don't know, it's an aversion too. So I don't go to the movies all the time, or I go to the dollar theater. I just, you know, wait and watch it or pirate it or something, you know, watch at home. Because, and sometimes there's some that I'll want to go see. We'll go to the movies just for an event. But, yeah, you can't go to the movies on the cheapest because, one, Donna's got to have her bucket of butter with a little bit of popcorn in it. And then we have I might get one thing, and we share a soda or share a water or something like that and go to the movies, and it's $40. I mean, it just the tickets, you know, is over 30 or something. And then, you know, oh my God, you wanted anything to eat. So $40 to go to the movies, and I'm just, wow. And you can get it down under 10 if you, you know, go to a different one and you got the Pepsi stained seats. But I mean, you know, it's, I'm sounding like, you know, an old man. I remember when, but in North Carolina, it was old prices. I mean, we're going to a restaurant, we're getting a couple of Philly cheese steaks and drinking $11. I'm like, what? This is like real meat, right? You know, then you see in the fast food, yep, you know, 2 for $6 or 2 for $4 on croissants or Whoppers or Big Macs or, I mean, it was a price slashing war going on or something. And you go to the grocery store, you go to Walgreens, you go to, you know, medications, medicines, you know, coughs, whatever, you know, I'm looking at various different things that are there for, you know, trinkets and trash. And you look at different stuff. I'm going, why? Is it a tax thing here? Is it a, you know, what? And then we came to Washington and boom, prices, you know, like almost double on just little, just regular stuff. Well, my friend Rick Tompkins that moved to North Carolina, he went around the country, and that was one of the reasons why he moved there. He goes, things are cheaper here. Why? I have no idea. You know, I have no idea. It is substantially cheaper in that area of North Carolina, and it's beautiful. Beautiful. It was kind of a mild. It had four seasons, so it wasn't like this winter-summer thing, or it wasn't like summer thing. So it's just beautiful. North Carolina, you could see the colonists. What a utopia America, you know, is, certainly was. And they grow, I don't know, any and everything. You know, it was so much green. I'm going, where in the hell are the cattle? Why aren't there cattle on these pastures? Well, there are some. I guess they were out in the, I didn't see as many as I thought I would, but they're well fed. America's got it going on. I think we're going to be okay, but they're going to try and scare the living crap out of us. But what happened in the Renaissance? Global warming, and we had a bunch of food. And they had time to create art. Well, technology and, you know, good times and good weather, maybe we'll be able to create some freedom. We'll talk about it.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Merry Independence Day, or Happy Independence Day, or Joyful Independence Day. Are we independent now? Are we done? Is, you know, Trump going to have a really big party in Washington, D.C.? Yeah, the Blue Angels fly over. So I remember seeing the Blue Angels when I was, God, how old was I? Probably 7 years old. What's that, late 60s? You know, I thought it was very, 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 very cool. Got the model, built it. Then put it on a string around my head until, you know, I'm sure it broke. But It is a awesome thing to go see the Thunderbirds or the Blue Angels or a lot of these performers. And one of the things that they did out in the East Valley, if you've ever been to one of these air shows, they're worth going to at least once. I mean, you know, I've been to several, I mean, over the decades. And the one thing that I saw the first time at an air show when I was, I might have been in the 70s, early 70s, was a Harrier jump jet. And they didn't have YouTube back then. If you didn't see it or know about it, or it was on ABC, CBS, NBC, something, you didn't know. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing this jet. It's kind of sitting out there, and boom, it pops straight up. Until I'm going, oh, hell yeah. That was the coolest cool, the cool I ever cooled. I didn't get to go up and kind of touch it and everything. I'm like, back in the day when you used to be able to go touch stuff. And I'm just going, this is amazing. Where's my flying car? It always came down to that. So I'm going, well, you gotta put some wheels on this thing and get a headlight and kind of, what the hell, man? This is back when I was a kid. I'm still waiting on my flying car. So this is a big impact on me. Well, one of the tricks that they do is they'll have, you know, here comes the they always had like the one. You know, you have like five or six planes, and you'll have all but one, you know, coming around. And then the one, there's always a solo guy out there doing some funky stuff, scaring you. Well, they had slow information. They're probably not going 100 and something miles an hour. They're just, you know, here they go across the field, and they're slow, and you're kind of, you know, watching them, and all right, you know, go, or, you know, give me the punchline here. They get in front of you, and all of a sudden from behind you, this guy snuck, and he's going warp speed. Whoop! Right over you, really low, and just blast when it scares the crap out of you. And I'm going, oh, you sons of bitches, man. You did that on purpose. So it's worth going. If you're under 13, you're 6 to 13, that's the maximum impact for certainly young boys. I mean, just boom, I got some rare. And then they have a lot of new stuff. We have a friend that's involved in a aircraft that they're promoting and debuting at the Oshkosh event this summer. And it's going on here directly pretty soon. I think it's like, yeah, you know, like now. You know, it's in the middle of summer, July, I think, sometime. So we get to hear about that and get some pictures and how that goes. And then we have in Vegas, we got a Narco Vegas, which is on the 21st, I think, that Sunday. And then from Wednesday to Saturday is Freedom Fest. Now, I've been to a couple of Freedom Fests before, and it just seems kind of Republican-y. That can spell libertarian almost, you know, and I'm just, politics, you know, but a lot of good friends, a lot of good people there, and get to go pirate. So we're going to go to that, you know, thanks to Mark and Ian and Free Talk Live. They got me a ticket to go and so on. And I know a lot of the guys, so we get Doug Casey come over and, you know, say, yo, what's up and stuff. So it's that was really nice of Mark to hook me up that way. So we'll go to that and put on the dog, and I'll help them and play producer and be their gopher or something, you know, out of respect. And then I think we'll get to see a lot of the guys, and I'll report back to you, you know, what the mood is going into 2020, because I think, did Trump ever speak at this thing? A lot of the, you know, big Republican, like Forbes would be there, you know, and a lot of the other guys want to go touch the ring and say they were, but the big draw is Doug Casey. And Doug, you know, he's a good friend and comes on the show whenever, and he's the draw. Now, he used to have an event called the Aris Society, where in Aspen every summer he'd go and hang out for a week or so or more and do polo and everything before he'd go in the opposite months and go play polo in New Zealand. And now he spends a lot of time in Argentina. And he has a place down there called Cafayate, and it's I don't know how many acres, hundreds. I mean, it's a big place. It was a vineyard, you know, so they have their own wine and so on. And they got farms around there and everything. So their idea was, you know, we're going to create a 6-star resort golf course, every kind of tennis you ever wanted to ever out in the mountains of. And we have a community, a valley, a small town, a village that can feed us. you know, we got some money and we got some farms and we got some and we're good. We got water and, you know, we'll survive. We'll make it. You know, we're going to be okay. And then we'll go to the other part of the world and we'll do another thing somewhere else in the off season or something. So there's a lot of guys also that we know you might hear names about doing in Nicaragua. They were in Uruguay was a thing for a while because they started legalizing all drugs. You know, they're doing away with the drug war, and Uruguay was first. So everybody's going, "Whoa, man! If they got that mindset, they're thinking not that they're, you know, waited for the law to do whatever drug they wanted or something, but it was just the attitude." So then it started happening everywhere. So that's not even a criteria hardly anymore. Then, but Nicaragua. You know, they have some really nice places up in the mountains and everything. If you can feel you can got security or they're stable or the economy's doing better or something, they figured they were doing pretty good. They got some cheap land and be somebody up in the mountains in Nicaragua. So I'm going, okay, so they got that going on. In Ecuador, a lot of these places, they you have nice temperatures. You may have 12-hour days, 12-hour nights, and the sun be up there beating on you straight up. But you get high enough in the mountains, you're in the 70s. You know, you're 78 degrees just, you know, chilling up there and plenty of food. And it's just always 78 degrees, day, night, whatever, and you just walk out Garden of Eden kind of thing. Gee, I wonder why people live longer here. So it's – there's not – they, them, those – and, you know, and a lot of people that are even freedom-oriented, freedom-minded, that have some resources that are trying to save you, they're going, look, man, you know, we're going to need to be able to take care of ourselves. We're doing it, setting the example. And some technology makes it a lot easier. I'm highlighting a lot of that and making it to where, you know, like they have a propane backup generator super pack here that when the power is intermittent a lot, and they go, we don't care, we got backup. You know, they put in the infrastructure, you know, it costs, you know, whatever it costs, and they got enough that don't care. We're not worried about power. And you do have backup satellite for communication. We're not worried about communication. And the phone, we're not worried about, you know. So you can insulate yourself from trouble, and that might be a chunk of money, so you got one less, I don't know, swimming pond, pool, garden, shooting range or something to be able to, you know, you prioritize what you're going to get. But we're going to be okay. No matter what happens, humanity's going to make it. And it's going to be a lot of the good, smart people, resources, and good guys that will always be there. But so will the bad guys. Because they think they know what's coming. They think they know what's going to happen. They think. Until nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, you know, and then things happen and they're like, damn, we went overboard. So who are they? They, them, those. You start hearing a lot more. Here we got Charles, the Koch brothers and Soros are creating a foreign policy think tank together. It doesn't surprise me. But, I mean, it scares the crap out of me. Like, I need Soros. I need anybody having a foreign policy with that kind of power. And then the left. And what is their combination? What is the combine? Why all of a sudden Koch and Soros together on anything, much less foreign policy? Why? Trump is not part of their. Man, you could be whatever, but you better be on our payroll.
Freedom is the answer.
What's the question?
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Farum.
I'm
covering the secrets and exposing the lies. You know, one of the things I really look forward to getting back, it's been, I'll be gone almost a month. You know, it's been, we went to Fork Fest, Pork Fest, North Carolina, Washington, Blaine, and now here, and then we'll be back in studio, I think, Tuesday. Yeah. So we'll be back next week in studio doing it live from the studio. And I look forward to James Corbett. having him on. We're doing it on Wednesday evening podcast now because it works out better timing for him, and we can do it weekly that way. So there's a lot of special, you know, I've been kind of holding off. We've been working a lot on the, you know, the forever internet kind of stuff and meeting with guys and kind of which directions we're going to take and different items we're going to start selling. Oh, what are you, Alex Jones, Health Ranger? But we have been accumulating so many different things that, you know, go and pirate. We developed at least three different solar generators that Bob and I have been working on. The Raspberry Pi 4 is coming out, so that's going to give us a lot better ability to communicate and hot tech, make it easy, and you just order to pirate stuff, and we send it, it's all done, plug it in. Then, and of course, the dome stuff up here, we had a four, it's like a 21-foot, four-phase, three-quarter-inch dome. And I just, and it's been sitting up here, you know, for a while, and they'll get around to it. And all of a sudden, boom, they started putting in pads in an area up here where they're putting in more cabins. They have several cabins and a yurt and, you know, and spa houses. And I mean, it's just constantly, you got a bunch of land and some money, and, you know, over the year, you just keep developing. You know, you have more friends come up and do stuff and family. And if things go to crap, you know, there's we can go there. So they put in some RV hookups and such, and on this one overseeing kind of knoll, a beautiful location, they put a like a 24-foot round foundation with electrical going in it and maybe some plumbing and be more like a cabin kind of thing. So they got that there with the dome on it. So now I'm going, yeah, the contractor, the head guy here, I'm going, ooh, I got to tell you what Jay Noon told me. Oh, it's that pond liner stuff. Maybe we've been looking to seal this thing. Well, here you go. And it's easy to. So it's, we're having some fun with this. Well, what do we do with our pirates out there? What are some of the things? Well, the big thing is quit smearing the man all over you. It's cosmetics, personal hygiene products. Donna has been, for years, we've been making our own soap and kind of, you know, tweaking a lot of that. We've been doing chapstick, sunscreen, hand lotions, other deodorant. And it's gotten to a wide enough range. I'm going, well, the only thing left would be like toothpaste. But then we got Magic Mud. You got some other people doing some stuff. And I'm going, okay, you know, we might improve on that. Might get a little, well, you know, that'd be something to work on. But I just want to be able to be trust, go pirate and not be smearing chemicals. And that was what the Batman Begins, the one with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. When Jack Nicholson played the Joker. The whole point was is at the fundamental level of the cosmetics, they had different chemicals that were killing them, people. And in combination, if you did this makeup with this deodorant, and all of a sudden, boom, you're dead, you know, with a smile on your face. Why so serious? So anyway, I'm going, I don't want to keep smearing this crap. God knows what's in there. I mean, I can't even pronounce this stuff on the label. So I'm going, I don't want to be, I mean, I you know, eat well or better, you know, than, you know, used to. I eat better, I, you know, healthy about, you know, my water and, you know, conscious to be able to, you know, do the garden and I got the fresh eggs and, you know, so I feel fairly good, you know, and I'm going, okay, well, but I'm smearing these chemicals all over me. And, you know, you're, skin is like an organ just sucking all this stuff up like a sponge. So I'm going, even taking a shower, and you got all the, you know, the fluoride and regurgitated or defecated chemicals in the water supply. They feed back to you, and you're kind of bathing in and getting sucked up of maybe not. So I go, I don't want to be smearing these chemicals on me. Donna, can you start pulling, you know, do different recipes. So it's been years. And I think I'm about ready to start packing. Now, we have artwork and logo and ready for to promote it. And we're going to start doing that. I'm going to start getting, you know, people to give us their address, and we can start mailing some sample stuff on the thing. And then, of course, you know, open up the store and then start buying it, and we'll start promoting it. And the big thing, and the reason I'm ready to do this, is the deodorant. It comes in a stick. You just get, you know, like a stick that you normally get, and you have the little screw thing on the bottom. You take the cap off, use it, and you wouldn't even know the difference. Well, you know, you get them in black, and we'll put a pirate face on it and whatever, but it was made in a pot, you know, on the stove by Donna. And the only change I want to make in this next one, because I go to Pork Fest, and I can go like 2 days with the same shirt and not reek. I mean, okay. Take a shower, Ernie. But I mean, it is amazing how and because it's antimicrobial and it's not an antiperspirant, it's a deodorant. And we didn't add colloidal silver to it yet because we've been making that a lot. You know, we started, I mean, we always knew we could and people would always have it for us and, you know, we'd buy it or whatever. And I just didn't need to. And finally it got to where I just needed a bunch and I just said, you know, I'll just do it. So I get my rectifier out, which is like a controllable battery charger I do for my battery, you know, manufacturing thing. So I get that, or you do it for plating, you know, it's for electroplating stuff. And it just looks like a battery charger. You just get to control a little bit more with the amps and the volts, and you can kind of be more specific. But it only goes up to about 13.5 volts. So you can use little 9-volt batteries or a couple of them to do this. And you get alligator clips, and you just connect it to pure silver. So we get a 2-fill harmonics that I'm semi-sacrificing. So I take and I put those in. You don't get the alligator clip down in the distilled water, or you'll, you know, be plating stainless steel or something, and our chromed metal. But that you just put the silver in on one negative, one positive, distilled water, boom, flip it on 13 volts, and you just wait. You know, 6-8 hours. It depends how much of the more darker brown or amber it gets, the more parts per million. And based on the color, you can tell how much you have in there. So we're going to take that and add this to the deodorant. So with, I'm just wondering if I can go 3 days. Now, if I can make it 5 days, well, then I'm Steve Martin's tuna fish sandwich deodorant. It works for 4 or 5 days. You just put a tuna fish sandwich under each arm and you're good for 4 or 5 days. Yeah. So we'll go, that's my age, the 70s. Anyway, so we're going to make that one alteration just to see if it gives us a little bit more time. And I'm going to promote the crap out of that because it's always that. And the one thing that we're smearing the commercial with, they've got your underarms. And if we were to test all these deodorants, I bet you there's going to be all kinds. There is. I mean, hell, they got them listed, all the crap that's in there. And I'm like, no. And has it changed my processing power, my mind? Am I healthier? Am I better? I feel better just, you know, because making the right decision. And this is one thing that I think is going to change as time goes on. It's these little marketing, you know, little decisions, anarchist decisions that you make on your own life of just stop smearing the man all over you. A lot of people are doing this with toothpaste. Toothpaste is, they're putting it in their mouth. They're going, yeah, I need to get better on this. This is, but my kids don't like it. So here's your fluoridated government dentist approved 4 out of 5 dentists say, you know, swallow this. And it tastes like bubble gum or something to get the kids' teeth. You know, until they're like 6, 7 years old, get your butt over here and I'm going to show you how to, you know, I'm going to brush your own teeth. You know, they'll sit there and brush their dog or cat's teeth, but they want their kids. It's amazing. I see it in the horse property around us. They spend more time and money worrying about what they put on or in their animals than they do their kids. And I'm like, where did that come from? How did that, who you trust, what? So we're going to be focusing a lot more. We're going to free ourselves from the interest and the intrusion and the smearing all over our bodies of all. And we found guys are making their own colognes, their own perfumes, their own, you know, there's different essential oils and combination, and you can customize. And I'm going, cool. So we make, you know, do you smell like a pirate? I mean, you know, maybe you want to. We're going to find out. I will let you know. So there's a lot of plans on the horizon and so on as we get into the future. And I'm patient. I'm just, you know, but that was one thing. Stop smearing the man all over you. Go find something not. So we're working on it. We're going to help.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, undefeared, coming to you from the woods. You know, it's the first year we came up here, we had all our phones and text and, you know, hotspotting and everything years ago. God, it's like probably 10 years ago. And we're close enough that it go into a cell tower in Canada. And they go, that'll be $800. And I go, so what? I didn't go into Canada. I was, yeah, but you connected in. You totally agreed. And you pushed the button to give us the money. And I just pitched a bit. Finally, they, you know, they rescinded it. But I was, oh, so you got to be careful of that. They get you. But it's going to get to where pretty soon it's just going to be ubiquitous Wi-Fi, everything, service of high speed of everywhere. And they track you. You know, can we get away from that? So we'll see. The James Corden, Donna's going to sit in for a little bit. Rolando's probably sleeping. We'll get him in here before, you know, at least we'll do a full hour with him. I got a bunch of questions, and he'll get it. If not, you know, Donna, go up and say, Rolando, come on, get up, you beefy hunk, you. So he's a good-looking guy, and I've known him for years, and he's just pleasant, and he knows a lot about Panama and Cuba and certainly Central America and everything. So it's going to be really good. And Donna go wake him up. I told him not to worry about it. I said, don't get up. I'm there to 9, you know, whenever you get up, and we'll do it. So I don't want to put any pressure on him because, you know, we're working hard. And, you know, sleep is good. It's good. And it's been really nice up here. Sometimes it gets really hot in the summer, and it doesn't get dark till 10. You know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, from us being in Phoenix, you know, I mean, it gets darker later there, but not this late. It's like a land of the midnight sun kind of thing. I'm looking forward to talking to James Corbett when we come back because there's so much stuff going on, and I really like to get his perspective on a lot of things. But one of the things is intellectual property. He just did a video about intellectual property. Now, before, a week or so ago, he had Stephen Kinsella on talking about IP. And I remember it was early on, God, it's probably 11, 12. We were in our downtown studio. I remember that when we first had him on and had Scott Beezer. He's a graphic artist calling on, man, he was all about intellectual property, and I can't believe, and you guys would, and libertarians, and this is where we diverge from. But he's kind of changed now. As time goes on, you start to see intellectual property is just an excuse for they, them, those to selectively do what you can't do, and it stifles creativity and invention and so on way, way more than it encourages, which, of course, is their argument. But it was in the Constitution. They have a copyright. And, you know, where did that come from? Who did that? Why did they do that? What was the origination of it? You know, nobody invented anything before copyright. So it's, you know, a few hundred years old, but it comes as a permission slip from the crown. That's where it came from. You know, it's like the crown is protected and you can and you only and you're to put these words together. I'm just not just out of principle. And I don't see it as I hate when we have a letter on it. It's called God, which one is it? Fourth, fifth letter, Captain Mark. And it's, let me get the name of it so I can remember. But the one thing that Stephen Kinsella is going on about and James Corbett, I really want to delve into, and I'm sure something else will come up, you know, squirrel spark my interest on Wednesday. But I definitely want to give some credence to this intellectual property thing, because the European Union is coming out with promotional propaganda videos that are, oh, imagine a world without creativity. Suppose that there was only one song and one movie and one outfit, what? This is just, I smell desperation on this control grid. We're not off the grid. We're above the grid. You know, it's just, I don't want to be a part of it or influenced by all this collective, because there's so much of this that influences our lives and you don't see it. You don't understand. You don't feel it. You're immersed in it. You're fish in water. You don't see the water. You don't know how much freer you can be without all of this oppression and suppression, which is the intent oftentimes. Oh, you're so not allowed to do that. And as we get into tech, a lot of times it's things that you're not allowed to not have. So you got to be surveilled. You want a phone? You want to develop a phone? You got some IT techie? You went out and you got this big brick of a cell phone, super phone of, you made it yourself with Radio Shack parts, and you took apart your toaster? I mean, you want to? No, not allowed. It's got to be communicate on their ways and have the president be able to send you a text, a national emergency of we know where you are. Really. I need to go pirate, man. I need more pirate stuff. Let's get to some pirate. Well, this stuff is coming. I've seen people send me stuff all the time. I'm going, ooh, what happens when we get the man off of our skin and out of our mouths and system and, you know, away from our communication devices and in my head, and I don't have to have an implant? But just as much, that's one of the other, you know, Dr. Idris Barber letter on Pirates Without Borders. What is the big focus there? Is that we be allowed to augment ourselves. There's going to be, what happens when you can be smart and telepathic and communicate, get the chip into the kind of your phenomenon with the John Travolta movie kind of thing? Nope, not allowed. It's not fair. You're not, no, not allowed. No, we can, but you can't, and you're not approved and you need a permit. So it's over our lives and our individual decisions. It's not whether you should or shouldn't do something. It's not whether you believe or don't believe in a deity. It's not whether you want to live in a certain place or another. It's just the freedom to choose. Choice. That is the variable. That was what the whole trilogy of The Matrix was about. Choice. And they want to give you the illusion of choice. This whole democracy, welcome to the 4th of July. Happy 4th of July. And you're free to vote for your master. Yay, we're free. You know, once you even think about it a little bit, you're going, yeah, maybe not. I'm good. You know, now the first letter of Captain Mark is, you know, I raised my back, black banner. Second letter is on cryptocurrency, pirate money. Third letter is on communication, you know, pirate communication. Fourth letter, Captain Mark, pattern monopolies. Pattern monopolies is an intellectual property thing. And czar date 45-370-380. Now, what that means is 45th president. He was 370 days in office, so it was just over a year when we wrote this, and it's 380 words. So that's kind of a time stamping it. And it's, you know, I'll just start it and you kind of get the idea. How much time we got? Yep. Yeah, a minute. You can suffer. Landlubbers have been conditioned to believe that the originators of a useful idea deserve exclusive right to that idea. But these innovators are nothing but privateers granted a monopoly by the crown over words, images, patterns, and processes. They demand legal protection while salting the landscape behind them. Other potential inventors are restricted from using their own property and forced to navigate a wilderness of prohibited ideas. Now, you'll hear that in the radio commercial, but there's like four more paragraphs that go into, you know, defining this. And the point that we're making is, even if you're going to make a statue, you know, I want to do David. I might, you know, give him a little beefier in the shoulders and make him a little more masculine or whatever, or increase the penis size, or whether he is or isn't circumcised or not, whatever. I want, it's my marble. I'm going to, you know, copy or semi-duplicate or do a little different kind. No, you're not allowed, even though it's your own material. your own rock. You're not allowed.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back. Hello. I could sing, or I could plug in the computer and go find, probably do some music. But I didn't bring the music computer. I had enough stuff, man. I was fortunately on Groupon. I saw a couple years ago this handheld scale. It was like weighing fish or something. It was a digital little hand thing you strapped on your luggage, and you pull it up, and you go, 52 pounds. Got to take a couple of pounds out. Take that book out. Take out some flyers. Put it in and redistribute it. Boom. Two bags, and I'm up like 100 pounds. 99.3. I mean, you know, so then you add some stuff. You sell some stuff, or you distribute some stuff at a function, and you can add kind of, you know, I'm keeping it. But you're always in at the airport there going back. So now I can do it in the hotel room, or I can do it at home to where I can weigh, and I take this little scale thing with me. It just fits in your hand. And I'm going, very, very, very cool. It's been very convenient. But we're lugging around. So I don't bring everything, you know. But I can't. But, yeah, the music, I could do it if I want. But you get over it. Get over it. You know, maybe I'll do some rock and roll. We'll see. That's another thing. You know, the intellectual protections of you're not allowed. You did no more 7 seconds of Led Zeppelin, you're nope, 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 and they come after you. And the point that Davi and I really made in the letter is that this could, you know, be the extinction of humanity because of this kind of stuff. Oh, don't think so. Fundamentally, pattern monopolies are intellectual colonization. Privateers petition the crown to prohibit the use of alleged derivative thought. This ruse impedes creative freedom and regulates progress to the domain of a small class of scoundrels. It limits all future innovators to an ever-decreasing field of permissible thought, and in the long run, threatens the survival of humanity itself. The reason we put that in there is with all this intellectual property, there's limits on development of space travel. There's limits on development of, you know, any kind of invention that might save us from the asteroid collision of the meteor shower if we die. And I'm going, the very fact that one thing that they're always going on about how humanity is the biggest threat to Gaia, you know, the Mother Earth or the Earth, or they're just like, you know, we need a pathogen to kill off. We need to be, was it Theros or Thamos, whatever, the guy in the Infinity War, that we got to like take out half the population of everybody, and I'll just wake up every morning to a grateful universe that I killed half the sentient life. Yeah. So then, you know, a lot of the environmental, they're going, yeah, he's not such a bad guy. We're going to take out everybody. So I, this whole concept that, you know, should we be able to innovate and to protect ourselves? You know, even in the medical thing, I could have saved thousands more if they were just willing to break the law to preserve themselves. Well, what if that law was, yeah, I can't build this here rocket with this here, you know, engine and using this combination of fuel of whatever, you got to get a permit, and we're all dead. You know, I can give you 15 gazillion examples of how intellectual property and the creative thought of individual minds being suppressed by, you got to get a permission slip. And the thing is not that you have to get a permission slip. I mean, you just do it, but then you can't sell it or recoup any investment and that kind of stuff. Because they go, see, you have a patent, so you can sell it. No, you need to get rid of the patents, and I can sell whatever I want. So this is, you know, the concept behind intellectual property. Anybody that invents anything, they did it, you know, on the shoulders of somebody else before them anyway, or they came, or maybe they got an original idea or whatever. So what? I love to have this discussion with, and a lot of people that are supportive of this, they don't like it. And when they prepare by going and looking at the other arguments or reading Stephen Kinsella or stuff that we've done on it, and I go in debates or have them on the show or I'm at presentations and so on, they fold. A lot of times they just can't quite make the argument. They can't come up with enough gravitas in their position to be able to counter it. And then they get infected by having even researched the other side's arguments. They're going, damn, man, they make a lot of good points, and eventually they come around. I see it all the time. So where are we? How do you do even names of stuff? You know, Donna came up. All right, Donna, here, go in the mic. All right. So what was the car that you just said you sent us that we wanted to look at?
The 2020 Lincoln Corsair.
Corsair, the Lincoln Corsair. Now, our son and grandson's name is Corsair. And so it's kind of, ooh, Lincoln's going to go pirate. It's kind of, and it's the Ford Escape. You know, it's a crossover little SUV, you know, micro thing that they're getting a Uber upgrade to the Lincoln brand. So it's like, you know, the Escape with extra leather and, you know, cooler wheels or something. So it seems cool. Now, who writes on this? Eric Peters. And we had Eric Peters on, man. He hates him electric. So, one, I'm going, ooh, it's Corsair's a pirate car. Is it going to be electric? And it's written by Eric Peters. And I go, nope, I guarantee it's not electric because he ain't writing nothing about electric. So it comes in with, you know, whatever. So I go, maybe it's not a pirate car then. I lost interest. I'm like, meh. But that's going to happen. You're going to start seeing a lot of references to rebel, pirate, scallywag. You know, it's going to become popular. It's going to be rebel. When we first started our restaurant, my partner, it was going to be Pizza Revolution, a Pizza Revolution. They have the guys wearing kind of revolutionary vests. It was going to be, you know, a pizza revolution, and we'll have like different, you know, quotes and being rebel and all that. And he goes, nope, and he nixed it. And his name was Bella, and he finally goes, hey, we're going to call it Pizza Belly. I'm like, what? Pizza Belly, be more pizza for your belly. I mean, I made it work, and we had the belly bug and, you know, the VW and everything. But it was like right before we opened, within a couple of weeks. No, Ernie, I can't, because he's a good Christian, and he was a city councilman, he's a lawyer, and he just couldn't, Pizza Revolution, man, he just couldn't do it. And right after we opened, that's when the Chihuahua Taco Bell revolutionary dog hit, and it exploded. And I'm going, yep, you missed it by that much. I'm telling you, the mindset is going, you know, this revolution thing. Well, of course, it, you know, it waxes and wanes. It goes up and down. And it just, and he just, you know, and he was the money. So I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, I'll do. So we went 50-50, but he put up the money. And I, you know, let him, and I didn't push back. I mean, what are you going to do, you know? So we had fun anyway and made it work. But, you know, this I feel it again. And it's an attitude. And it's not just going to be, you know, a label or a sticker or a slogan. It's going to be a default way of life, going pirate. Hashtag a pirate's life for me. Since you know this, you know the destination, so we're creating, you know, the mile markers on the journey to that. So if you know what the bad guys are doing, you know what they're going to do. You know, they're going to more regulation, more this, more that, more chemicals, more approved intellectual property if you're not allowed to something, you know, and you have to whatever. You got to augment. You can't augment. You only get this kind of coverage. You can't get that kind of coverage. You got to take this shot. You can't get that one. I mean, it's all this control. A pirate's life for me is coming. And we're prepping the foundation of the intellectual argument for being leave me alone-ism. That's what's happening, and it's doing well.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock. All we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Gugu, Radio Gaga. All we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Gaga.
I love all y'all. Yeah, we're having, you know, I know the future is going to include, it's going to be a love thing. It always has been. You know, that's the only counter to all this chaos and crap and everything. They have to divide and conquer you in your head. The opinion is either somebody needs to be suppressed, or somebody's going to save you, or you need to get a permission slip. And I'm, that is the problem. This is an alliance of means between the crown and the privateers, but not an alignment of ends. Both collude to establish a permission culture in which everyone second guesses their own thoughts, never sure which ideas are permissible to share or develop, but their objectives are different. The crown aims to cripple dissenting opinion, while privateers will only be satiated when all our ideas already belong to them. It's already been IP'd. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. The user is at the center, but not at the helm. What we're saying there is that what they're doing is all of our, you put up on Facebook or you do anything, or it's all theirs. You think of something, no, we already thought of that. Does it have letters in it? Well, we copyrighted letters. Does it have an invention of something that we did and kind of almost sort of, and we did a search on, you're not allowed. You know, a lot of times libertarians, they'll do patents on things just not to protect the patent, but to protect their ability to even do it. They go, yeah, we got a patent. Now we can do this. Well, these other guys doing it. I don't care if anybody else does it. I just want to be able to do it. And somebody tell me I can't. You know, that's the only reason a lot of these guys that I know, when they do it, you got a patent, so I can do it. If I don't, somebody else will do it and say, you can't do it. So what we did is, it's kind of like a copyright thing. If you just show that you did it first, that's what the battery project was about, with the carbon nanotube thing. I just go, look, here, I document early on when they first started, I go, boom, there I did it. Now you can't patent it. You scumbags. Carbon, seriously? So this is why we put this in there, because I wanted to make sure that the bad guys knew, and we were inspired by the concept that people understood, that the privateers, the ones with the licensing, the ones with the protected monopoly, these guys, they'll only be happy, only be satiated when all our ideas already belong to them. You can't do that because you didn't get permission slip, and we're not giving it to you because we made up the reason why. You know, national security, that's always a goodie. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. Don't think so? Hey, Google, can I have the full file you got on me? No. You're at the center. The user's at the center of all this, but you're not at the helm. You're the source of it, but you're not in control of it. You're the creator of it, but you can't have access to it. This is happening on everything. So I'm going, all right. Foundational, fundamental bumper sticker mentality above the grid. Still voting. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You know, I mean, all these different sayings, and I have a bunch more from back in the day. I need to pull them out. Start repeating stuff more. But but we're getting it incorporated into the letters. Now we're going to be focusing on some other stuff. We got to do one about, you know, education and really the children. Where are the children? Where are the pirate children? They got their own pirate ship, Captain Kidd. So it's going to be interesting us doing this. It's a mindset. It's just an opinion. It's general public opinion. So we're going to start really pushing it, because Freedom Seniors was always designed before there was all the social media craze and all that kind of stuff. It's created to be able to do that. It's just scalability. How is it going to scale up when it gets popular? Because we've been to where, boom, man, we hit the limit on servers, you know, several times. So I'm going, we're going to. So IPFS or something like that, as we get the speed up. When we do this and we go pirate, it's going to be go pirate. And what happens when you have access to it via satellite or mesh network, or you bypass all, they don't even see hailing frequencies invisible to the crown? This is the goal. Will we be the number one, oh my God, and kind of Ernie and I'm Mark Zuckerberg then? I don't know, maybe, probably not. Why? Because I don't care. That's not the point. I'm not looking for the big, giant, massive, whatever. It's to inspire that there'll be a lot of others. Now, they've already done to where they've, some countries and regions, certainly China, you know, has done everything they can to make sure that you don't get access to this kind of information through the easy channels of I push a button. And I give you a perfect example. In the 70s and 80s, when they first started doing satellite television, you get these big 10-foot, satellite dishes and such, You, death, dying, and destruction if you ever were to look at the decadent west of whatever in Saudi Arabia. So in the 70s, a good friend of mine, she married one of my best friends, you know, and we were all friends in junior high, high school, and so on. Her father worked in Saudi Arabia on the oil fields and so on, and he'd be gone for months at a time, come back, and they'd build houses and, you know, all the stuff that they made some money. Well, while he was doing that, he'd tell us all the stories about different things, and one of the things is how strict they are on the decadence of the West and movies and, you know, but what's one of the most popular movies that they had? I mean, it was like, or shows. It's Baywatch. As they're slow motion running down the beach with their boobies bouncing in their swimsuits. Okay? Baywatch, man. That was, Baywatch Nights. You know, and how they were getting it was satellite. So these satellites, the communication of going in, then when it got to where, you know, now it's, you can download pirate just about anything, they were going after people with satellite dish. You're not allowed that, the satellite dish, the ability to get this kind of information became illegal or frowned upon. So then do you hide your satellite dish? You have on top of a sand dune or hid in a turret of, you know, who, I have no idea. And the dishes start getting smaller and smaller and smaller from 10 feet down to they get, you know, 1 meter, and then what? You know, so freedom finds a way. It always breaks through. It always goes around, under, over, through. You're never going to be able to stop, but you can suppress it. You can slow it down. You can divert it. You can be, you know, the river's going to flow, but you can put a rock in it and make it go around and faster over here and an eddy over here. Kind of, you just keep messing with it, but it always finds a way. Information always gets shared. It's just, and then it's an excuse to put you in the scow. We're going to arrest and do, and kind of you're not allowed. And if that doesn't work or is not popular, like what's going on in Hong Kong right now, to where the timeline went something like this. When did they give the Panama Canal back? I think that was Carter. You know, the end of the 70s, early 80s, I think that, you know, and of course they were complaining that he abided by the agreement that we gave it back, you know, for Panama. But then Hong Kong, it was the late 90s, I think. And so here's the British Empire, their time's up. They had an agreement of back, and they turned it over. All right, you. But Hong Kong is going to be independent and insulated from the edicts and the party, the Communist Party of China until, I don't know, it's 2030, 2050, you know, some time in the future. Well, that'd be a coming up. So what they wanted is a lot of dissidents or ne'er-do-wells or people that spoke Chinese and were infiltrating in, or they're smuggling in, you know, disc or information, or they're sharing on pirate satellite based of something, mesh networking of whatever. I mean, you got a bunch of computer geeks in China, you know, and they're getting to see or do whatever they want. Then what? They want extradition abilities from Hong Kong to send them back to mainland China. Million people hit the streets. Hell no. Hell no. On this issue of the sharing of information. Then what do you get? Your credit citizenship score. And this is becoming a thing all over the world.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Ooh, I didn't have music ready. Like, yeah, it's like work. All right, I'm sitting here reading on this new plane. Rolls-Royce looks to smash speed record with the world's fastest electric plane. They're going to go over 300 miles an hour. Now, in 1931, Rolls-Royce got the gasoline-powered kick butt. They reached 343 miles an hour. And I'm going, really? That's as fast as I thought. The P-51 a little bit faster than that. But anyway, so 343 miles an hour is fast enough if I could have a plane that I'm electric and I get there, you know, lickety-split. So they can go over 300 miles an hour. Now is what their goal is. Now, what they've done is they're able to, they got to get light enough on the batteries and the motors, you know, so that, you know, you can pull all kinds of batteries in and you can kick ass, but it doesn't matter if it weighs 50 billion pounds, you know. So they're able to get 6,000 cells into a dense pack that's 750 volts and has 750 kilowatt hours. And you get the new Model S, the 100, that's a 100 kilowatt hour battery. Well, this is like seven times that, you know, 7.5. So you go, okay, then what? Well, then you get some light motors. They got three little motors in sequence that's going to, you know, power this thing and rock and roll and let's see and make it as streamlined as possible. We're going to kick ass. So what happens when you got electric planes that are faster, more efficient than gas planes? What happens? The same thing that's going to happen with, you know, cars. They're getting to the point where they go, if they can have 400 watt hours per kilogram, so it's kind of, you know, what, you know, it's miles to the gallon, or, I mean, what's your metric that you're trying to get? Well, you want that. How much power can you do with how much weight? Now, the size is not so important, because now they're talking about making the door panels or the body of a car or plane or whatever is where it stores it, you know, where it stores the energy. And with different polymer batteries that, you know, you don't have even a wet electrolyte. There's no up or down or anything. You don't need gravity to have any kind of impact on this. You got it sealed. There's no liquid, you know, that's a dry electrolyte. So you don't have a chance of fire. Let's see, what's some of the other benefits. And it can be molded in any shape. Then finding different insulating powers of aerogels and different. I mean, a lot of things that we've been covering on Top Tech News on Freedom's Phoenix and are now over at Pirates in each of the categories. All this stuff starts to come together. So you go to Pirates Without Borders. At the very top in the middle, build the ship. Now, all this tech that, you know, not everything goes in to build the ship, but if they got new material or new battery technology or new motors or something like that, I'm going, yeah, this would be part of the ship. Excuse me. Different communication ability, different tensile strength of this thing, different, you know, fuels of that, different ways of producing more efficient panels that will do whatever. Oh, I wonder if it's up. I bet it was up. There is a new airship that Dubai is doing, and that's a, now it's a big giant precariat. That's an airliner that looks really cool. That's like a flattened teardrop shape, and the whole upper is solar panels. So it's powered by it's electrically powered by solar, and that's enough panels, man. They'd be producing. Well, the thing is that solar panels just in the last few years have gotten to be a third the size for the same power. Or three times more effective in producing. So if you got, you know, 10 square meters to produce X, now you only need three. And you start putting these on airships and aircraft, here we go. I don't know why we can't get all excited about this. It's because intellectual property, and you're not allowed, you didn't get a permission slip. You know, so you go build the ship. And you'll see all this stuff. Tesla Maxwell batteries. Kyocera 24M venture might provide hints to thick electrode, solvent-free electrode manufacturing process are likely the next big step in battery tech, blah, blah, blah. So we go on about the Tesla purchase of Maxwell battery and why and what they do. Carbon nanotube. Thin film patch antennas viable for 5G drone sensors, Internet of Things. What they're talking about is these films of carbon nanotubes. They're more efficient than copper and a lot of their metals and so on. And all of a sudden, they're tougher, they're more flexible, and they can essentially be painted onto anything. You know, it's just the skin of the ship is, you know, the shields up captain. Electromagnetic, you know, you can dial in any frequencies, the shield harmonics kind of thing. It can produce electricity, it can expend, you know, electromagnetic radiation, on and on. Here we go. We will build cruise ships in space so radiation problems of life rafts go away. So they're talking about small ships. They're saying, yeah, there's this radiation thing we got to deal with. And so on. We'll just have big giant cruise ships and battleships up and kind of we're going to and a hotel. So they're talking about that. Then there is a polar bear fur inspired insulation is even better than the real thing. What they're talking about is how is it that polar bear, did you know polar bear skin is black to absorb most of the heat and so on? I didn't know that. Well, they're white on the outside, but their skin is black. I'm like, really? So here we have the way the fur is in different densities at different levels to the skin and how it works for insulation. So on Rolando's got Rolando, put an O at the end. It's Rolando. Actually, I always call him Roland. It's Rolando. So anyway, he'll be here in a little bit. Get him in the last hour. Then new photonic chip will push to limits of computational energy efficiency. Instead of using electrons, they're using light, photons. So enormous amount of heat goes away. And it also allows for 3D processing. Like you got an Intel chip that's one layer. And maybe it have, you know, a couple layers on top of that. But what if it was continuous like a crystal, three-dimensional storage? Oh, it would be like Superman's green crystal. Everything and all the information. Then what are they finding out? That you can store enormous amounts of information in DNA. How much information is there in every single cell of your body to build a you? The differentiation of the cells and the stem to go to... Woo, that is amazing. Now we have a story up just yesterday. It's probably still on the front page that they're using diamonds to store information. Now, how do they do... I don't know. I haven't finished reading the thing. But what they do is they store the information digitally into a diamond. It's there forever and always. I got a diamond. I go off and, you know, and I play it, and I got Superman green crystal. It's already happening. Boom, 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 boom. So then we have, different rocket engines, different, you know, fusion reactors. This is getting, they're starting to find out that fusion reactors, to be able to make, oh, that'll never happen. Of course it will. And what are they finding out? That Mr. Fusion works better than, you know, super fusion, big giant reactor. You got Doc Brown in Back to the Future has old Mr. Fusion that needs some, you know, banana peels or something to work. And they're finding out the smaller they go, it's easier to contain the field, and they can create a lot more heat dense. And you got your own fusion reactor in your basement, and it's you, or for a neighborhood. But they don't need a big giant reactor. It's not even practical. It's not going to be as efficient. It's not going to be. These are experiment, you know, platforms for them to be able to find out. It's going to be a toaster that's going to power everything. Now, in the future, I've seen books or sci-fi or something. You know, people walk around with their own power all the time. It's just a cube. They just keep, that's my power. It's like your Tesseract. You know, it's like one of the, you know, Infinity Stones. You're walking around with your own Infinity Stone, and I got all the energy I need. Think I'm kidding? And I tell you why. Because we thought of it. Just even think about it. That we would be able to, how much above the grid are you then? It's already coming. Now in the next hour we're going to talk about, you know, some international politique and how it's the Chinese are coming in to the Western Hemisphere through Panama and the banking there and the shipping and the, you know, they'd be bribing them with some money. I said, you know what? Woo, we got a suitcase. We don't even need to bring a ship over here. We don't got to threaten to bomb you. We just got a suitcase. The money. And then what? Cuba. You know, how's that going to shake out? Oh, and warships from Russia are starting to go to Cuba and say hello. But in Havana, you know, Guantanamo Bay is a U.S. base in Cuba. How's that work out? Lots of interesting things, and you really, 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 to survive, need to think about a pirate's life for me.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared here in Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Hancock in the woods of northern Washington up near the Canadian border on the Columbia River. And you can find us from that. Good luck. But we come up here on a regular basis over the past decade or so to hang out for a week or two with some close friends and supporters, and we just, be chilling and stuff. Well, we also do it in the winter. We go down. Usually it's around February or something when it's the coldest in Phoenix. So we can go on the beach and we go swimming and we can chill on the West Pacific side in Panama there. And one thing you think of Panama, you're going, God, man, who wants to deal with the bugs, man? I don't want to go down the jungle. That sucks. But here they have, it's like Southern California. It's a constant temperature. I mean, it never really gets over 83, usually. I mean, it's about 80 degrees or so. The water's always warm, and it's really nice in February. So I'm going, yep, I like going down, and it's dry. It kind of has that, and not all of Panama is like that. So this is unique. And, friends of friends and good friends, and so they went all around Central America. They went to different countries. They went up and down Panama. Too many mosquitoes here, too much here. Government's bad there, you know what, and they found a place. And it's kind of exclusive, and they built the complex, and they're part of, and building more and putting centers and health center this and doctors that. And, one of the guys that they've come across for years has been Rolando. And, all right, say your last name. I can't do it.
Aguirre.
Aguirre. Yes. Aguirre. Okay, get up closer to the microphone. There you go. Aguirre. So it's a, and he'll say it several more times because I did it wrong. So he's a personal trainer. He owns some gyms down there, but now he's just, a personal trainer to the stars and the politics. I mean, the guy's got skills. So they bring him up here. This is second, third time you've been up here. You've been up here before, right?
It is second time, yes.
Yeah, so he's familiar. I saw Rolando. I go, oh, heck yeah. So you're getting some physical training while you're up here. Now, your wife is a doctor, a nurse?
Yes, she's a doctor, pediatric.
Pediatric doctor.
Pediatric doctor.
Okay.
Yes.
You got to be this close. Okay. Yeah. Pull it back that way. There you go. I just want to make sure we can hear you. So, his English is very good, but sometimes the pronunciation of a word, I got to go, what did you say? So I may be interrupted and go, wait. What's that word again? So he's got it going on. Now, in Panama, the politics, they just had an election for a new president.
Yes, sir.
So he's telling us all, I go, you got to come on, Ray, and tell me all about this. This is good. Now, to give your background if you're willing to say how old you are, you good-looking dude too, yeah. Man. He'd be pretty. And your wife, beautiful. But she lives in Cuba. Yes. Does she travel? So tell us about how your wife, she's a pediatric doctor, and why is she practicing in Cuba, and how do you get to see each other, and how that works. Go.
Yes, my wife is Panamanian, but when she finished school in Panama, she's very smart girl. The government, the smart people, they pay in this time.
So she got a scholarship to go to school.
In the United, in Cuba.
Well, where did she go to medical school?
In the Cuba, she approximately 7 years.
In Cuba.
Oh,
okay, she got her degree in Cuba.
Yeah,
right.
She back again for Panama, and she worked approximately 5 years in the hospital in Panama. But the population in Panama is the 4 million people, and the Panama City have 1.5 million approximately. The problem in Panama is especially, for example, pediatric cardiology, everything is in the city. The people don't like in the town. We live close in the beach. It's difficult. You feel fine, pediatric. The government say the doctors work in the beach, on the mountain. They like a study for 3 years more for pediatry or whatever, you know.
Oh, so the government wants her to work for part of her condition to pay him for her school.
Yes, for the school.
That she does 3 years of pediatric, yeah. And because you're accessible to the most people, they want you near Panama City or something, but they didn't want you to be out in the rural areas.
Yes, because
usually in America, that's the opposite. They're trying to encourage doctors to go out into the rural part of America, so they have doctors out there. But in Panama, for pediatrics, they wanted you to live. You had to practice in Panama City, so you live in the mountains, kind of a nice area. I've seen your home. You got a nice home.
Yes.
Now you got acres and acres of. You live out in the a little higher. It's not so hot, and you're enjoying life. But when did she go to Cuba?
In the Cuba, back in the Cuba, because the Cuba have the good medicine. Mm-hmm. It's very good medicine. The government told you, if you like, for example, go to this Cuba, Spain, they give you the option maybe for four or five countries. She liked it, but the Cuba, because she know Cuba for 7 years, know. She say the medicine is very good,
Well, how long is she obligated to be there for a certain time?
She have 36 years old. 36.
36 months?
Excuse me.
36 years? No.
No. for everything, it's approximately 10 years. But now, she staying in the Panama Star last week for 2 years more. She studied for 2 years more for baby more smaller.
For smaller specialty, infants.
Specialty for 2 years more, but in Panama City, because we live 1 hour for the city.
So she's going to be coming back to Panama City?
She need to go to Panama City 2 times for a week, for a study more. She start this week. She start new.
So she's not going to be in Cuba?
No. Yes, she finished in Cuba. She now stay in Panama.
Oh, she's in Panama?
Yeah, she's in Panama.
I didn't know.
Yeah. She finished in Cuba 2 years ago.
Okay, so she's not in Cuba anymore.
No, when she back in Cuba, the government, before she worked for Dr. Niar, now she is pediatric. The government put up, give more money, but she cannot finish for the public. She need work on the public. If she like it, work for the clinic private, she can. But she can't say, okay, I don't work more for the public. No, because it's one deal.
So for the public, so you mean for the government?
Deal. One deal, because the government paid for 2 years in Cuba, three years in Cuba. Now when she back 2 years ago, she worked in the morning, we have the one clinic private. We have.
A private clinic.
In a private clinic, she works 7 o'clock and 12 o'clock. Next to she back in the public for 1 p.m. or 5 p.m., next to she back again for the private clinic in the 12 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, we have other doctor because we are the owner of the clinic,
Oh, you own the clinic?
The owner of the clinic, yes.
She has her own clinic.
So she's
allowed to do her own private practice after she does her public, and she's got the
two more years.
And then she's done with that, and then she's off. And she's not very old. I mean, she's what, 30?
She is 36.
Man, you guys are taking the special exercise of Orlando treatment or something. God, man, you guys are good looking, young. We need to move to Panama. All right. God, man, am I getting old? Is it me? Or are you guys just getting younger? Well, this is interesting. Now, one thing when we come back, it kind of got a base of who Rolando is and his wife, and they're professionals. They're in the healthcare industry. He's trainer to the stars and the politician. He knows, and it's like a barber. You're a physical trainer, a barber, a masseuse. I mean, you're hearing all the story. You know all the secrets. Well, we might share some of those secrets with you, what's going on, and certainly with China.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back with Rolando Aguirre. Aguirre, I'll say it. I got to roll my R's, I took high school Spanish, so I can do it a little bit. So Rolando is telling us about his family. His wife is a doctor. Her three brothers are attorneys, lawyers. And then you have a lot of guys that, your family that's on the radio a lot because they're attorneys for the people and they get a lot of attention. But this is your first time on the radio. I sent you the link here, and you can, we'll have the link up and everything. And they'll go, in the third hour, they'll go, hey, man, Rolando, you were on the radio in Merca.
Yeah.
Now, you have some information that I want to ask you some questions, and you get on a rant here. You can go ahead and share with us. Rant? What's a rant, Ernie? Anyway, so we got to get the language thing here. But China. China is really all in the news in America. Our president's going to ban or stop, and then 5G is coming, and internet of everything, and going through the Panama Canal that's increased its capacity now and all that. So let's start off with that. The Panama Canal is, as when it was given over to Panama, they still have a military base there, but there is a... there's a holiday. It's called Invasion Day or something. Well, let's talk about that, because you have like independence from Spain, and then there's independence from, I don't know, somewhere else. They got some, there's all kinds of Latin holidays, but Panama has Invasion Day. Is that like a good thing? They go, yay, America came and saved us, or boo, America, killed everybody. I mean, what is that day? Tell me about that celebration.
Okay, the Panaman people love the American people. The Panaman people say thank you for American people when it is done the invasion, because in this time, in 89, the chief is the General Noriega. He's the bad boy, the people lost. It's, the crisis is so bad.
So people didn't like Noriega?
No, don't like it. The people only like the Noriega is the military. The people is okay, want the money, but it's only a little person, But all people is so happy for the American people. In this moment, the Panamanian people, all Panamanian people love the America. All love the America. The people
Americans say, or America?
Americans. Americanos.
Okay, the individuals.
Yes.
Do they love the America government? No.
It's because the Panamanian people, I don't know other part of the Latin America.
Yeah.
The economy, the Panama is very good the last 20 years. The economy, the Panama is the best in Latin America.
Oh, I've seen it grow just in the time I've been going down there, last decade or whatever.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the skyline is like double.
Yes,
I mean, double. The financial, like Dubai or something.
Yes, the Latin America, the first 15 building, biggest, the Latin America, Panama have 12. That 15, all Latin America. But I think so, the Panamanian people, no, it's so many for the political outside. Only little person, the people. You understand?
Small amount of people.
The situation in the other country. Then, for example, for the American now, the situation, they know are political. They don't say Trump is good, Trump is bad. The Panamanian people know that.
Don't care. Well, now when the Invasion Day is, thank you, America, for coming and freeing us from this Noriega guy.
Yes.
But there was a lot of people got killed.
Yes. Okay. It's true. Many people die. But the situation before the invasion, Panama is bad. Next to the invasion, the Panama changed a lot. It's sad because in every war, the people die, in every war. It's hard, but I know the American people, when they go to the invasion, they know one kill the innocent people, The problem, the military people, when in the war, the first military is okay, half you dress, but next day, smart people change your dress for the military, it put your dress for normal people, It's confused for American people, But
so after the first day, a lot of the Panamanian military were wearing civilian clothes, so then everybody got shot.
Yeah.
They were like, nope, yeah, boom. So this is, that's a whole other thing. I've seen documentaries on it and bulldoze people in the mass graves of kind of whatever, and we'll sweep this under the rug and let's start over in, peace in America. You know, but so now you're saying since then, Panama has exploded in economic activity. They become a financial hub of a whole bunch of stuff. And then, of course, America wants to tell you what you can and can't have as a bank account and going through and whatever. And that's one thing. Panama, is cryptocurrency cross your radar screen at all? Have you heard of, you know, like Bitcoin and all? Is that being used in Panama at all?
The American people?
No. Anybody.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin and so on, that you have friends that use it?
Yeah, sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Are businesses, people just using it? Who's using it? Why are they using it? How do you even know about it? How do you know about, you know, cryptocurrency and Bitcoin? Where do you hear about it from? Is it, you know, friends using it? Or you got it in your wallet? You got a phone with Bitcoin on it? You know how?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Well, how silly of me to even ask. I'm so sorry. Yeah. All right, so it's growing. It's becoming a thing.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Damn. All right, well, about China. All right, give me. Oh, first off.
Talk about the people for the China now.
Wait. Before we get to China, I want to talk about the new canal, because that has a lot to do with China, you know, stuff too. So let's talk about how many more ships can you do? How much more capacity? What, when they upgraded the canal system, which they finished, right? It's done, right?
Yeah.
So how long ago they finished it? It wasn't too long ago, a couple of years ago or something.
Yes, a couple of years. I forget, but it's a couple of years ago when they finished the canal. Now more ships can transit for Panama Canal. It's bigger.
Does it increase the revenue? I mean, do you have more money in Panama City? Has it got a lot?
Yes, it's more money.
Well, then you have a new president that just came out. In Panama, you have your elections like every 5 years.
Yes, every 5 years.
Is it all elections at the same time?
Yes, every
5 years. No voting until 5 years, then everybody votes.
Yes, only the 5 years. It's okay, but the in Panama, next to the invasion, because before the invasion, is the chief, is the general. Every 5 years, is election, is the vote. One president, but the chief is the general, not the president. The president is only, you know, it's nothing.
Before. So Noriega was not president?
No, Noriega is general.
No, he was just had the guns.
Is it the chief, the general? Every 5 years, the people, Panamanian, vote. But the chief is the general.
Okay, so they would vote for a president, but he wasn't in charge. Yeah. It was the general.
Yes.
So that does, and that's not anymore. Is the general, they have a position, or they not on
no,
the?
No.
They're no more.
No more.
Okay,
no.
So it's the president.
Yes, and next to the invasion, coming won the opposite for the military, because the military is the PRD, and
the PRD.
The PRD is the name for the political people. And every 5 years change the president, but never in Panama one same political one for 10 years in the United States. You know, Bush have 10 years, Obama 10 years.
Okay, we're going to talk about it when we come back. We're going to go into break. But we need to understand this, you know, who's really in charge and what's the...
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence from the forest in northern Washington, from Columbia River of Get Over It. You know, one thing that we're talking with Rolando Aguirre. Am I close? Say it.
Rolando Aguirre.
Aguirre. All right, I got to roll my R's better. All right, so Rolando is telling us about Panama. And I remember I was down there 5 years ago. And I'll give you an example. 5 years ago, they were running campaigns. It's their five-year campaign, if it's all about campaign. And we talk a lot to the staff and our drivers and the taxi guys and so on. I speak a little bit of Spanish. I can find the bathroom. But, you know, what happens is, you know, asking them what are the issues, what's important. And all the women, they were very much, because Panama was making a lot more money. They were in Latin America. They were wealthy compared to a lot of places because of the canal. So they're attracting a lot of immigrant workers. They're getting their illegal alien thing. They're getting, you know, people from Venezuela and Colombia and a lot of other places are coming in there. And the biggest complaint from the women in Panama was that these damn freaking good-looking Colombian Venezuelan babes are coming, taking their husbands and, you know, being prostitutes. Well, we got to stop and put on the border and stop the women. That was a big thing.
Yeah.
Seriously, they were just adamant, man, we got to stop this. They're crushing our Judeo-Christian Catholic morals of decay of we get. It was a big deal. And I'm going, wow, that is, it's amazing what they can drum. Why was that such a big thing? Do you remember this?
Yes.
Yeah, what, why was that a big deal? They didn't specifically attractive women coming into Panama. That was the campaign. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, who thought of that? That, all right. So that's, you know, that was a thing. So then Venezuela goes communist or whatever, and they have all kinds of problems. Well, then they're flooding in. Now it's everybody. It's not just the women. It's the women and, you know, all their friends and everybody else. So how is Panama dealing with the what's going on in Venezuela?
Okay, the situation now in Venezuela, more Venezuela go to the Panama. Now the government say Venezuelan people in Panama is more than 100,000 Venezuelan people. For every country, before Venezuela only need the passport for Panama. Now after the control, I think so 5 or 6 months ago, the Venezuelan people need the visa for go to Panama.
So it used to be that they could just travel, I got a passport, they come in. Now they got to get permission to come in.
Yes, they need the permission, yes.
Well, are they getting it? And you have, what is Venezuela, 4 million or something? It's not a lot.
I think so, the Venezuela, it have close to 40 million.
40 million?
40 million. Colombia have 58, close to 60 million, Colombia.
And then 100,000 coming at, a year or at one time? Or, I mean, what's the flow?
Now it's the 100,000 is living in Panama.
Living. 100,000 living. That you know of.
Yes, yeah, I know, yes. Because in the news say more Venezuelan people go to the Colombia because it's easy peasy. They need only the walk. Yeah. But for Panama, they need it's more expensive. They pay the airplane, you know. In the situation in Venezuela, I don't know, it's true. For months, these people want only $20 for months. You know?
Yeah, no.
It's hard for they buy the one ticket. The people, it's more easy go to the Venezuela and Colombia.
And then from Colombia, I mean, eventually you can make it to Panama if you walk enough. But I mean, you know, it's but you have your own immigration thing. Are the Panamanian people welcoming of the Venezuelan people? Yeah, come on in, be free. Or they're like, nah.
No. When it's beginning, it's okay. Everything's people say, okay, come on, I have friend Venezuela. But now. I think so. Every country, when it feels a lot, of people go for your country, for you safe, you know. Not only coming good person, come bad person too, no? When you take the one visa, you have the control. Who people go to the country?
Okay, you know? So you have the visa, so you have a little bit more control.
Yeah, more control.
And now the bad guys are coming.
Yeah.
Is there crime going up in Panama from Venezuelans?
Yes, yes. It's been many up. You can see in the news, in radio. When the community people, the is more dangerous, you know. But next to the visa, they have more control. The Panamanian people
are they
have more control.
Shipping people out? Are they arresting people that aren't supposed to be in Panama and shipping them back?
Yes.
Are they doing that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so
yes.
It's a man. Yes. Welcome to America.
Yes.
You're American now.
Yeah. Yes, it's similar.
Okay. So now the canal has increased. Is it like double? The ships, triple?
Yes, the double. It's so big.
So that's all. So you're
this is crazy.
Big,
yes,
increase.
Big, yeah.
Okay, so now we have China influence.
Yeah.
China comes in, they say, we love you long time. Here's a bunch of money. So how are they influencing Panama and its politics? Or are they're going to influence politics. This is the way, I don't care what the laws are. But you're telling me they were building some bridge or or railway or transportation. That has always been a big thing. In Panama City, you have roads go in and out, but rush hour traffic, you add 2 hours. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. But, you know, there, a lot of the transportation across, you know, a bay or across the river or across, you have Panama City, then you have the outskirts of Panama City. Well, a lot of the poorer people that would come and work in the city live outside the city, but it'd take them hours a day to travel back and forth to get into the cheaper housing they have up on the mountain and tin shack of whatever the heck.
Yeah.
So this is the big promise every president. I'm going to build a, you know, yeah, a subway. I'm going to build, yeah, I'm going to build, yeah, I'm going to build. Here comes China and they say, we're going to do a toll road. You let us own it and we'll charge for you. Yeah. We'll build it. You know, yeah, so that's what's going on now, right?
Yes, yes.
Did they finish the bridge?
No, it's a start. This promise for the China is for the last president. Now coming the new president started this morning. He need the following.
So he just started this Monday. He got inaugurated. Just started this week.
Yes, this week, Monday, okay, the last Monday, yeah. Uh-huh. They need the following because for the Chinas, I think so, I don't politic, but the China situation, the Panama, is only for business. But you say the question for Panamanian people, the Panamanian people love the American people. I have many friend China's too, because it's the first generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am 44 years old, I remember the first China in Panama. I remember the
Wait. You're 44?
44.
God, man, you look 29.
Yeah, 44.
Donnie, you guys go look at the archive picture and tell me this is 44, okay? Big bulging biceps. Okay, yeah. So you have friends in China. Yeah. They're first generation here. They moved here. They have family. They're going to the schools. They got their own private schools.
Yeah.
You know, you got clients that are Chinese.
Yeah,
I mean, so China.
Just because when I...
But only business, not politics. They wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong.
Yes. And not for the China. It's for the business. You know, for the business. But all people know in Panama, the principal... It's the American people, you know. The American people is the first.
So they're in like this Trump war of we like America, so we're going to buy American and China. We don't like China, and we're not getting their crap in China. Okay, you can build the bridge or whatever, but we like America.
Yes. It's all Panamanian people. It's normal, no? All Panamanian people say thank you for American people because Panama is now... So a lot for thank you for American people. Panamanian people is working very hard too. Next to the canal, the Panamanian people work, you know. Panamanian people is very worker.
Well, a lot of American people go to retire there. They move there, yes, and they bring in a lot of money. It's like our friends here. I mean, they're just Panamanian people. We like America.
Yes. Oof, you're working in Panama. Every Panamanian people love the American people.
Now, China, are they, you know, having their own supporters or people supportive of the Chinese companies? Because they're coming in. What's the benefit of having the Chinese companies there? What are they doing for you?
Yes, now you can see the China is for certain generation. Como I stay together with the China people in the school. But no, it's the same for the American people to go for the tourism. Because when they're young, the store is the Panamanian. Next to coming the China, the old China. But this generation, now you're speaking full Spanish. It's nice people, you know. I have so many friends.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. What we're going to do is Rolando Aguirre, whatever. You know, you get the spelling. But go ahead and say it. You got to do your own name, man.
Rolando Aguirre.
Aguirre. All right. So Rolando, a lot of experience in seeing the business because he's talking to the actual people. When we're in Arizona, Phoenix is, young activist and so on, and we're hearing from guys like Rolando what was really going on. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the people that owned the little stores, or they were the caddy, you know, their kids were caddies at the country club, or you valet parking, or their waiters, or all of a sudden, you know, and then, God forbid, you have your own business dealing with these guys and so on. All of a sudden, you see what's really going on, who's meeting with whom and why and how much. And what he was describing, I want to do this real quick, sum up, and then he can give us some details, is that you have first-generation Chinese, second and third generation. Now, the first generation of Chinese that came in, like what year? When did China start moving?
I think so, approximately. I remember it's the 80. Because I bought 75, I have maybe 10 years. I think so, close to the 80. It started for the 80. 80.
So in the 80s, you know, here comes the Chinese. They got a plan.
They planned the first Chinese store.
Because so the Chinese come in, Panama, that's where the canal is, banking is starting to go, starting to get freed up, and certainly, you know, what was it when Noriega got nailed, 89 or something. Yeah. So all of a sudden it kind of opens up, you know. Panama had the canal for like the last decade before that, like in Carter administration, you got the...
2000, in the administration for Panama, the canal, take the administration.
2000, that was it?
Yeah, 2000.
I thought it was a lot earlier. Anyway, so here, you know, everybody knows America really controls, you know, the Panama Canal. Is that kind of your... Yeah, it's America's got it. You know, they got guns. All right. So you have that control, but here comes China. The first generation, there, you know, you got Chinatown and China Church and China China. They go to work and come back or China.
No, excuse me, Ernie. I now remember. The China people, is when the building the canal. When the building the canal, coming people to Jamaica, it coming the people to China.
Oh, so there are workers.
The workers for the canal. Because now I remember, I say,
for it's the canal. Like the railroads in America.
Yeah, but. You can see little China. For the business, these people only go for the worker. But in the 80s, you can see the first Chinese store because the store, everything is the Hans Panamanian. The China people start in Panama City, need to go to the town. You can see the many Chinese store, but before it's only little in the city. They have the Chinese.
Okay, so you had like a Chinatown that was made from the workers, like in San Francisco, when they were working on the railroads in America back in the day. Yeah. Well, the same thing was going Panama Canal.
But it's little. It's a little Chinese.
And Panama Canal, railroads, they need workers. So, you know, so you got a Chinese population from that. In the 80s, here come the business owners.
Yes.
Here comes the companies. Here comes the factories. Yeah. Here comes the, you know, okay. So that first generation of that, they maintain Chinese heritage. You marry a Chinese girl, you marry a Chinese boy, you're Chinese. Then they start having children. They start speaking Spanish real well. Yeah. They're growing up. Now you're getting the third generation of Chinese, and they're like marrying Panamanian women and having you know, mixed race babies and stuff.
Yes, it's a mix. Yes.
So do they care? Is it a thing?
Yes.
Their parents all pissed off? Or no,
no, because I think so. This new generation Chinese is, for me, is 80-90% Panamanian. You can speak saying the Panamanian people, they love the Panama, they dance in the music of Panama. Many are Catholic, you know, the first generation for the voodoo, you know, Buddha, for Buddha. But new generation go to the church. It's in the one life, go to the university, work together for Panamanian people, not only for the Chinese store.
So you think that Panama is making the Chinese there more Panamanian rather than the Chinese are making Panama Chinese?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So China is integrating in the society of Panama. We're being invaded in the Western Hemisphere. Oh, my God. And nobody cares.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
No.
Business?
It's because it's business. Because Panama is very small. Yeah, I think so. The Panamanian people, when they feel some problem, everything Panamanian together go to the for talking about, hey, what's up, you know. But Panamanian people know the American people see is the protection, you know.
Okay, so and they lean America, you know. If they're running around with shirts on, they got American flags and not so much Chinese. They don't have the red star flags as much. Okay, so China, are they seen as a threat? Are they concerned? They don't like China any. They're worried they're going to have too many factories, or they're like, bring in the Chinese money. Go ahead, just, you know, spend all your money. We love us some Chinese. You bring it in here. Prefer America, but China's allowed to come in and bring some money.
The Panamanian people, I think, Soranese, they is very, I don't know, say what they say in English. When one people go to the Panama and say, welcome to Panama, is the Chinese, Indian, whatever place. Only the Panamanian people don't like it is the one people, but go to my country, you save your country. Understand me? If the people, Panamanian feel...
they go, fix your own country, quit coming here and giving us your problems.
Welcome to Panama. I see one example, when Venezuelan people, the first Venezuelan people have the passport, every people... the forest is okay, but next to you can see bad people in the road say, no, Panamanian people go to the government. Hey, wait, need the visa. The government say, because listen, all Panamanian people need the visa. I think so, it's saying the China is okay, it's okay. We don't feel the fears, we don't feel Panamanian people.
So there's no fear from a bunch of Chinese coming, they're not being violent.
Yes, the Panamanian people are not socialist. Panamanian people is a democracy, you know, send the United States. If we feel the government change for socialist, the Panamanian people go away because they know what we live.
They're not supportive of socialism. They're capitalists, and we're going to make us some money.
Yes, because we live a dictadura. Panamanian people know who is the dictadura.
They went through this already. This new ruler, when he came in, the new presidente, and he comes in, people went, yay. What was his vote percentage? Did he get like a lot of votes? Was overwhelming? He wins?
No, it's close. Very close.
Very close?
This election is very, very... He won only for... little person, no, for lots of person. Ricardo Martinelli, the last president, he is the record for more person. Martinelli won. Wow, for lots of Martinelli.
So people didn't expect him to win.
Yeah. No, because I think so for this year, it's many in Spanish, many partidos. For example, here in United States, I'm talking about. You have
Democrats, Republicans.
In Panama, this. Every time it's only two, same in the United States. The last time is three, and this time is eight.
So yeah, eight parties.
Yeah.
And they give money if you qualify for the ballot. The government gives you campaign money.
Yes, the government.
But then there's other money. I guarantee there's other money coming in from somewhere.
Yes.
So the guy that won, who were the special interest or who were the people that were supporting him? Who gave him money? Who wanted him? Who was the people behind him? Corporations? Trump? I mean, I don't know. Who was supporting him?
Yes, it's for corporations. When they finish the votes, every people need justification where it come in the money. They put in the news. It say they name the company. Everything needs is legal.
Before the election or after?
Before and after.
Okay, so you're talking about the campaign finance reports or where the money came
from.
Yes,
yes.
Yeah, it's all there, I'm sure. Anyway, so people gave, but who were they? Is it, you know, like Ford Motor Company? I mean, was it, you know, some big drug company, you know, Pfizer or something? I mean, who is supporting the president now? As the people? You know, was it a populist movement from the people, you know, in the barrio, you know?
Yeah.
Who supported them?
It's for the people, but he have more for the town, because the new president, is.
You mean the town? You mean small towns?
Yes, in the city won the other is the name is Cambio Democrático, is won the first here, but actual president won more for the town because he have.
When you say the town, you mean the little towns.
Yes, for example, not United States. Washington is the capital.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Washington State, Florida, you know, outside the city.
Uh-huh.
Outside the city.
No, so he had support from the people.
Yes.
Everybody happy? Are they excited right now?
Yes,
it's first week. They're like,
because
hope and change, hope and change.
Because is it because the president have so many cows? He like the people in the town.
Because he's a rancher.
He's a rancher.
Yeah, he's helping the farmer, the rancher, the people with land, taking it out into the countryside.
The people know this president. He know these people. This president is a very good person. I love this president.
Man, he kind of Trumpy, huh?
Yes, many people love the actual
president. All right. Well, I'm glad you're excited. You know, I can tell you, Rolando, he was very excited about, when we got here was right when he became president. Woohoo, man, we got something. And next year we will talk to you again.
Okay.
Or maybe this February we go down to Panama. We'll do it. We'll see.
Sure.
We'll see if you're still in love with him then. Yeah. We're going to find out.
I know Nito Cortizo.